Arteta! What a strike! What a screamer! Isola! What a fantastic goal! Arsenal back in it!
And here's Lippa, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
Arsenal finally play the perfect game of football for people that like to either be insanely mad or insanely happy. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. If you love being insanely mad about Arsenal, ooh, you had a 35 minutes to just roll around and frolic in. I don't know anybody like that. If you love being happy about Arsenal and optimistic about the opportunity, about the potential, oh my goodness, did you love that last hour and all the things it contained? Problem? They were both part of the same game, and it ends 3-3 at the London Stadium, quite incredibly. Actually, it ends 5-1, if we're being accurate, but the points are split, is how it worked. And yes, that is because West Ham did score 5 of the 6 goals scored, but let's set that aside for the moment and simply say, hello, we love you, thank you for being here. It is the international break, and aren't we thankful for that? Because if there's one thing all of us wanted, it's 2 weeks to watch meaningless football with no Arsenal. Whew, what a dumb thing they are doing. But, you know, it'll give us time to do lots of different content. We're going to rewatch the second half, I dare say, of the West Ham game for patrons tomorrow if you'd like to join us for that. And if not, no big deal, because there's still going to be podcasts over here, over on the free side. So go on whatever side you want. I am fired up today, in case you can't tell. I am wearing my Manscaped underwear. It is going to be that kind of day. And here to talk to me about this game is Paul. You can find him on Twitter at Pause in My Pants. Hello, Pause.
Woohoo.
And Clive. You can find him on Twitter. Clive, you still Clive.
Hello, hello.
Hello, indeed. All right. Coffee is coursing through my veins. We have a later kickoff time for this podcast today, thanks to daylight savings time, or the opposite, whatever it is when you spring forward, having happened in the US and not having happened in the UK so far. So I am 1 hour closer to you, Clive. Do you feel me breathing down your neck now?
Yeah, you sound pretty excited. I'm going to see what I can do. I'm sure you're going to spend way too much time on that first half hour, but let's see how we go, shall we?
So I want to break up the pod into three sections, really. The first 35 minutes, the middle 35 minutes, and the last 20 minutes. And what I'd like to do is spend about 92% of the pod on the first 35... No, I'm kidding. But I do want to kind of break it down that way, actually. And Paul, I'm going to start with you because I think I have a better chance of getting the answer I want from you than I do from Clive, which is why I'm going to start with you. Also, you have exactly 1 hour, which is about how long we played football on Sunday. So that's good. Look, it's easy to be wise after the fact. It's much harder to be wise before the fact or even during the fact. But I think when I saw the lineup, my feeling was it's too clever by half. That was my feeling. It's too clever by half. That he sees something here. He wants to do something here. He's facing his old manager. He's got a plan. He's got a special thing he's concocted. But like, we've had 2 days of practice for this game. We've had a system and an approach and a setup that's working. Maybe, just maybe, run that out one more time before the international break and ride this wave of relative success that we've had in that system. So for you, when you saw it, did you have a similar reaction? Or if not, why not?
So the answer to your first question is night, dark, losing time.
So it's not daylight savings time. It's night, dark, losing time. Let me tell you, I always loved it when you spring forward. But now having small children, when the sun starts peering through the window at 6 a.m., suddenly it's not as fun as I used to think it was.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Yeah. So in answer to your other question, look, I guess I'm of the school of not losing my mind over lineup tweaks.
Huge mistake.
I know. But I'm representing that part of our listener community that doesn't have a huge problem with a tweak in the lineup. I mean, we swapped the side. Well, I guess we made two changes. We had a different striker up front, and we swapped the sides that Aubameyang and Saka normally play on. And I just don't think it made any difference in the first 20 minutes when we went and swapped them back. When I went back and looked at the play and thought, what would have been difference had they been on the opposite sides? Not much. So the real question then becomes, going with Aubameyang or Laka up front. And Aubameyang's in a bit of a funk, and Lacazette's kind of earned the right to start, and the manager is not going to play Aubameyang through the middle for every game for the rest of the season, so he's going to pick and choose his moments when Lacazette will start. And he thought about battling Lacazette, getting bumped by these center backs, and let's be honest, Lacazette had a phenomenal game once we got going. It was not the worst choice. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand people who wanted to play this differently. I understand you can see a scenario where maybe the first 20 minutes weren't as bad. I don't particularly see it. But on the other hand, I can't disprove a negative. If you say to me, well, if we'd lined up with Aubameyang, then it would have gone much better and we wouldn't have sucked for the first 20 minutes and they wouldn't have been first to every ball in midfield and they wouldn't be all over our back line. You know, Aubameyang did cover back on the right-hand side. There is a kind of a logic to starting him on the right against Cresswell, with Chambers there to be a more conservative fullback. I mean, managers do these things. And the thing is, we have this binary of it's great or terrible, and it might have been not quite as good a selection as the other selection, and still entirely perfectly adequate for us to play good football. And we could have scored 2 in the first half, 3 in the first half, even with the few minutes we had there. And we could have scored 5 in the second half with Aubameyang on the left. In fact, Aubameyang could have got a goal, and we'd maybe have less to say about it had what's-his-face Dawson not got his paw on it. The reason he did what he did is he knew Aubameyang should be and was right behind him to knock that in for a tap-in. I've heard the arguments. I get it. I get why people want to play it another way. But I think the first 20 minutes are entirely down to other factors. And you know what I think they are. West Ham coming at us like crazed lunatics on crack because they've had 7 days of Moyes firing them up to beat into us, and us climbing off the plane from Olympiacos, even if it was the Emirates, mentally, and not coming with the intensity we needed to. It wasn't until they couldn't do what they did for 90 minutes. It wasn't until they got the 3 goals and kind of began to consolidate that we stepped into the game and started to feel our oats.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's all well and good. I think that you have to, if you're going to decide to wax lyrical about that last hour of this game, which is entirely fair and probably appropriate, you have to, I think, intellectually be prepared to acknowledge that the depth of the poverty of the first 30 minutes, or at a minimum, the first sort of 15 or 20 minutes. We started to climb back into it from 20 to 30 minutes. Not great. But in the first 35 minutes, we're outshot 8-1. In the first 15 minutes, they had 80% possession. If you go read the By the Numbers mm-hmm. column this week done by a 7 a.m. kickoff, not Scott, because Scott's on vacation, well-deserved, and I hope he's doing well, I think it was a really, really poor period. And I think my argument would be, setting fatigue aside, because it's always an easy and available choice, I don't think what I was seeing was fatigue. I think I was seeing a little of discomfort and confusion. I think you go from a couple of ball playing wide forwards to one on the right in particular who's not as comfortable, plus a fullback on the right who grew into the game and was fantastic, but you know hasn't started a lot. The team maybe not as familiar with him. So you put Oba and Chambers on the right, and you're going to really struggle to play out through that side. And I thought that looked really obvious. Chambers had one pass in the first 10 or 15 minutes, and it was a back pass from the opening kickoff. That was it. The ball wasn't going through him. You've changed up the center backs, so the play out from the back, you know, is going to be changed up. And now you've got Saka, who had been playing on the right, on the left, having to readjust to that. I just think it's a lot of things for the team to have to kind of adjust to with 2 days of preparation against a team that is rested and is going to be full. Now, Arteta said he had a plan for why he wanted Oba on the right, and I think a lot of people have referenced it, and it's sensible. And he said, we expect to have more of the ball. Look.
Did he say that?
Well, he said, you know, basically, he said we had a plan. It was a smart plan for playing, you know, for something like playing in possession, but we didn't play well. Look, Clive, the fact of the matter is they had more of the ball in those first 15, 20 minutes than we would have expected. And I mean, they had 80% of it, so of course they did. Once we came to grips with that and they got that 3-0 lead and started to play in a manner that was more like what we expected, which was 30% possession, we absolutely beat them to a fine pulp. I guess what I would ask you is, and we can come to some of the goals we conceded and why we specifically conceded those, because I think those are separate issues. But just in terms of the pattern of play.
I can tell you what happened.
Well, okay, yeah, go fire away.
Yeah, free swim. So, you know, full disclosure, I wasn't too happy with Aubameyang on the right, and my reasons for that is I just don't think he scores as much on the right. And when he has played out wide, he's either played on the left when we played four at the back, or he's played left or right sometimes when we played three at the back, and then he's got the hybrid midfielder supporting him, doing some water carrying for him. And so we have a very left-sided bias. And so it's sort of worked. When we've gone 4-2-3-1, it's a different game completely. Right? So what did West Ham do? So West Ham, quite early, were quite physical. And my eyes were on Souček, actually, because I hadn't really watched him closely. So my eyes were on him. And he was quite physical, particularly with Xhaka. And Xhaka didn't look right. And I was worried very early, because I know he's due one soon. He plays a lot of matches. He got bossed off by Souček early in the challenge. I thought, wow, because Xhaka's a big body, you know, and he got moved. That concerned me. And then there was one bit of work down our left-hand side. Sorry, our right-back side. And they crossed it, and I watched Souček. He just dropped it off, and he just lumbers into the middle. And I'm watching him run past Xhaka. Xhaka didn't pass him on, and he went into the middle, and he headed it just past the post. And I thought, Xhaka's not at it. I'm looking at this. When I watched it, I better watch it again today, because I know you were pretty peed off about the first 30. So I thought, let me get myself in Elliot's room. Right. So what happened? So they started playing quite well. And then we got away with it with the Souček header, etc. And then we got to a situation where we got a bit of possession. And we were fine. It was absolutely fine. The ball breaks, and they just woof it downfield to Jared Bowen, and he runs into the box with Pablo Marie. And they get their territory back then, because what they want to do is play in our half. That's what they want to do. Channel balls, Antonio going over to the left, Benrahma on the left, Cresswell on the left, and basically, and Lingard coming to the left on his right foot. Right, so they really loaded that side. So straight away, you look at the plan of having our striker with a striker's mentality, not a Maitland-Niles or a Saka in behind him, sort of doing that wall carrying, but maybe an Odegaard, you know what I mean? A double pivot having to stretch out into that side. You're thinking, hold on, he better come back. And neither of them really do. You know, Odegaard does on occasion, Aubameyang does. And so the stick or twist scenario where you want Cresswell to be kept back, that wasn't working. They were pushing us back with territory long balls into the channel. They were refitting it, setting it, and then crossing it into the box. Cross after cross after cross, creating opportunities to shoot, etc. So they basically killed our game plan. Just give the opposition some credit. They killed our game plan. They loaded the box early, and they crossed early. Right, so fine. They made the game long, which forced us to sort of fight for first ball, second ball. And we didn't win our duels, right? We just didn't win them. So now we're playing their game. They're playing a long game, territory game, crossing game, big bodies into the box. Aubameyang's on the right-hand side. Aubameyang is a striker by every bone in his body. He's now playing West Ham's game. He's now trying to track people, don't know where to be. Now, Saka is a midfielder forward. We all know what Aubameyang is. So I do think it had an effect on how we defended that side. I do think it had an effect. I think we nullified two players that have recently shown ability on the opposite side they were actually deployed on this game. So you have to hold your hand up to that. I thought the other changes that were made, I was absolutely fine with. So I think that had, but we have to give West Ham credit. I don't think some of the depths of reaction I've seen are really worth it. We're not talking about two dodgy players here. We're talking about Aubameyang and Saka, and we're talking about fractions. We're talking about a game plan. We're talking about two players that have basically carried us for the last 12 months between them. Mm-hmm. So it's really fine margins, and I think some of the reactions I've seen have been way over the top for that change. But really, West Ham were rested. They had a plan. They wanted to jump on us really quickly because I knew we were sleeping. I knew we'd be a little bit tired. I knew we wanted to play out the first quarter, and they didn't want to allow us to. And they get their first goal, a very good goal. You're going to come on to goals, I recognise that. But I just want to say that it was a territory game, almost like a game of rugby. Mm-hmm. And Antonio ran Luiz, and he had Luiz fishing a little bit, coming short, dipping in behind him. Jamie was having to run back. And it looked like they just loaded up on our right-back side into that right-back channel with Luiz and Chambers. And Aubameyang didn't really support. and it was just a bit challenging. We had Partey on the touchline trying to track Lingard. When you start seeing your double pivot out on the touchline running with a 10-11 type player, you already know you've got a problem. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Partey stopped him, but you're thinking, something's in the post here, lads. What are we going to do? And you're looking at Aubameyang to come and help. Is that the best use of your resource? I don't think so. So I understand people who are upset with that, but I don't think it was massive. I just can give you the scenario that West Ham played into, and we weren't able to play into him to force a change in their game plan until a little bit later on.
Yeah.
Can I add?
I would love that, yes.
So, like, you don't want Aubameyang deployed like that necessarily defensively, but either side he was on, he was going to have to do that. And he did do it. I mean, if you remember in the first 10 minutes or so, he comes from behind, runs the kind of half the length of the pitch to track a guy down, take the ball off him and turn around. He did cover back in front of Chambers. It's not like he wasn't providing some level of comfort and or some level of support there.
Arteta disagrees with you, just as a heads up.
Would it have been any different had he been covering the other side?
I mean, he goes to sleep on the other side for their third goal. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge problem. Wait, was the which is a goal that Antonio scores? Because Aubameyang goes fully to sleep on that and lets the cross come in, just walking.
Yeah, the third goal is Antonio's
header. Yeah, that's the one. But I mean, the only reason I said Arteta disagrees with you, Paul, is his exact quote is, I moved him to the left because he wasn't giving help defensive-wise. Like, he literally says that. That's his opinion. He may be wrong.
He's entitled to his opinion. But I watched it, and he was not covering back in an Aubameyang way, right? It doesn't have the intensity of somebody like a Saka covering back, but he was doing it. And if you're of the opinion he wasn't doing it enough on the right, then he wouldn't have been doing it enough on the left. On the West Ham point, once you make the decision you're going to play Lack up front, and I can get my head around that, then you're going to have Aubameyang on one side or the other. He wasn't doing nothing. He's just not going to give you that intensity. So, you know, it's death by bongo bongo.
I'm not giving you the title again for that, so stop using it.
So the other point is that people losing their shit over us against West Ham and how we should have reamed them. You know, we've got to be somewhat consistent. And for those of us who say we're a different team since December 26th, I think we are. I think we're a significantly better team. And when you look at December 26th onward, we are absolutely neck and neck with West Ham for number of points off the same number of games. It's not like they turned to shit and we got good. They're also better at home than away, even in COVID times. We should not have expected that we were going to ream them, even though that's what the last 60 minutes might have.
Is that move the goalpost slightly, though? Just only because I totally agree with everything you've said. But we were monstered for half an hour and down 3-0. Like, I don't like whitewashing that to be, hey, we weren't quite at the races and then we came back. We got monstered for half an hour. The worst we've played this season.
We also got
is not
they
good.
They scored the third goal after we'd swapped the sides of Aubameyang and Saka.
And I think
that
did make
it improve. They were still stronger.
No, look, so I'll read Mikel's quote just real quick, just so people don't think I'm misrepresenting it. With the way we wanted to play, asked why he played Aubameyang on the right. With the way we wanted to play, it made all the sense for him to play there, but we didn't have the ball, right? So that's part one. He's basically saying, we felt that if we had possession, you know, Aubameyang keeping Cresswell back, whatever.
He won every ball.
He then says, he could not have any influence in the game. I decided to switch them because we were having issues on that side defensive-wise. And the irony is, again, Aubameyang goes to sleep for the third goal once he switched to the left. I do think we started to improve in the game when he switched, and part of that is Chambers started to grow into the game. I felt when Chambers had Aubameyang on his side, Chambers was a target. He was a little bit weak, and we were having trouble progressing the ball. And when Saka moved over there, and they were able to create some triangles, it started to work better in general, because Partey, Odegaard, Chambers, Saka, they all got in the game. The left side, with Tierney, Aubameyang and Xhaka, I actually thought was a weakness in this game. We can probably get into that a little bit. I don't want to spend any more time on the bad part of the game. I just think, you know, to me, if this ends 3-2, the first 30 minutes is the whole game. And I don't think you can whitewash it and say, we just weren't quite at the races when you're 3-0 down, outshot 8-1, outpossessed in the first 15 minutes, 80% to 20. Like, it just, it wasn't just mediocre. I think,
because we were totally bossed in that period.
And you know what I
don't think,
it is?
Think it was because Aubameyang was on the right.
I do. I think Aubameyang on the right. I think
we lost balls all over the pitch. Yeah, every side, every area.
Yeah, and I think the reason is that we faced a good team in good form with plenty of preparation and rest and readiness, but I think we faced them in a system and positioning that we weren't totally comfortable with, and in a 15-minute period where we were trying to get comfort with our changes, they were absolutely at the races, and those two things combined to be a massive mismatch.
One of the changes was Chambers on the right. So that's a different in itself.
Marie coming in, Chambers coming in, Oba on the right, Saka on the left, Lacazette coming back in. You know, it's a lot of change.
Lots of things, not just Oba.
No, sorry. You may have misunderstood. I don't think it's purely Oba on the right. Sorry, Paul. I misunderstood. I'm saying I think the degree of changes he made for this game from something that has proven effective since Boxing Day caused us 15 or 20 minutes of adjustment that was met with some great football by them.
Why he made those changes. I understand why he switched Gabriel.
I think it was too clever by half. I mean, ultimately, I think he made too many changes with too little preparation. Yeah, okay. I mean, and by the way, you know what may have affected this? Smith Rowe apparently wasn't fit enough to start, and Willian wasn't in the side. He was unfit. So at that point, he was almost forced in. I mean, he could have gone Martinelli and Saka with Oba up front. It's pretty clear he doesn't want to do that. So he was already being forced into trying something a little different from what we've been doing. And I acknowledge that. But I think, you know, and I think the reason, my argument, ironically, I think one of the reasons he may have moved Saka to the left is if you look at who's been playing on the left in Smith Rowe, he probably wanted more of a high touch, you know, midfield comfortable left-sided player to more closely ape the kind of role that Smith Rowe was. No, again, it's not that the changes don't make sense intellectually. I'm not saying they're dumb. I'm saying I feel it proved to be too much change with not enough preparation time, and we got caught cold trying to adapt while West Ham were in a period of playing really well on the front foot. I think the two things...
You might have also got bashed for having kept the team even closer to what it was before and them all been tired and fatigued. So I don't... Like, we had three dumb goals. And there are moments in games. But they were always going to be much stronger than us in the first 20 minutes the way we came out. I mean, they were.
I want to move on, but I'm going to just finish it with this. The reason this bothers me is I can explain anything away too. It's not hard to explain why nothing matters. It's not hard. It's really easy to explain why nothing matters. We were down 3-0 after a half hour against West Ham. It matters. It was bad. And if we can't accept that we played poorly in that period, then we don't accept that we played well following that. They both matter. So I
wouldn't be advocating we played well.
We played terribly.
They bashed us.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, it happens. And I if you want to say it just happens because it happens, that's fine. There has to be a reason.
The real issue is teams are going to have their moments against us. Right? That's going to happen in for the rest of time. People are going to have their periods.
Like this?
You don't have to... Hold on a minute. We don't have to concede three goals during that period. Yeah. That's the issue. West Ham had their period. We had a period. They pushed us back, nearly got a penalty. They scored a good first goal. We're asleep. Almost 35 seconds later, we're asleep.
Yeah, it's terrible.
For two goals. Yep. And then the next attack is three. It's like three, I don't know, what, 6-7 minutes? I don't know what it was. So we, in a period of poor play, we managed to maximize the damage.
And that's been happening to us a lot, unfortunately.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the message.
We've been paying full price for our errors.
That's the theme. It's not the fact that we swapped over two superstars from one side to the other, although it was a contributory factor. The issue with this team is what happens when we're down. We are so down. Right? It's so far. Like I said yesterday, the floor of this team is low. We've got to lift that floor. When we're having a bit of a jog up, we haven't got to concede three goals. Other teams can just see off average 6 out of 10 play. We can't. We do something majorly bad or stupid, and we maximize something. We compound the flatness of a group who has a very good excuse for being flat, given the intensity of the week that we've had. Two European games, the West Ham have not played in a fortnight. Right? And you load up into this game, they did exactly the right thing. Overload, overload, high pressure, high territory, busy, quick restarts. Let's get around them. Let's smash them. Let's see how much they want it in the first 20. Let's control the story of this game. That's football, man. That's exactly what I would do if I'm playing Arsenal. Arsenal think, let's get our legs together. Let's just play the game, play our nice football, try to move the ball around and see if we can work our way into this game. We've got good substitutes. We can bring them on and win the game in the last 20. That's what I would do. You know what I mean? And West Ham weren't having it.
And you have to be fair, look,
you have to give them praise for that.
You can be in the ropes. You can be in the ropes. You don't have to concede three goals, to your point. The second goal is the one that really annoys you because all you have to do is be awake. All you have to do is be awake. There's five Arsenal players not even looking at the ball. And I have to say, Tierney, who we love, Tim gave him a stock falling in the instant reaction pod, and watching again, like, unfortunately, I think, you know, look, nobody's perfect every game. He's wonderful. We love him. It wasn't a strong game from him. He's got to stand over that ball there. You know, Leno, I was really harsh on Leno conceding this goal. Someone said Marie gets a touch on it.
I watched it. A little touch. And
I mean, I still don't think it should go through your legs and under your hands near post, even with a little touch. Just get lower, you know, be deeper in your squat or whatever the expression would be. But like, and now all this arguing has gotten me off my good mood. I was in a great mood. Listen to me now. I'm all grumpy and pissy.
I think because you're thinking we're trying to whitewash that period over. And I did explain to you why I think it happened.
It might be the people Elliot was arguing with beforehand because, like, we both think we sucked in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And I just tried to explain to you why. And they did a good job on us. They out physical us down the center. And they push us into the right corner. I don't think Chambers was weak. I think he was alone.
I think he was. Arteta was alone. As well,
yeah, he was absolutely alone. He was overloaded. They went into that side. We do it all the time to people, don't we? Mm-hmm. We overload one side. And we do that. We overload one side and we make sure that they are, that fullback is under pressure. Normally the right back. They did the same to us. And that's good. The most important thing is you recognize it, but you don't have to concede three goals while you're recognizing it. That's the problem.
No, you know what I mean? You sure don't, no. And I mean, look, we've been unfortunate, right, Clev? I mean, there's been every turnover seems to turn into a goal for the opposition. Every little mistake. I mean, you know, like even the Olympiacos game, the second leg. Okay, it's a Ceballos error, but they wind up scoring a goal where every angle is covered and they kick it off Gabriel and it banks in. And, you know, Xhaka makes an error and he, you know, against Burnley and he kicks it into his own net. And I mean, it just every error seems to be a goal. Going to sleep on the free kick, though, like that's just lack of professionalism and focus. Maybe it's fatigue, you know, but it. That ultimately winds up being decisive. I want to make sure we get to, though, what becomes a really encouraging, first of all, response and then performance. The reason I say the word response is, as fans, and this may be more a fan tendency, I think, than is necessary all the time, but we're always looking to see if the team is fighting for the coach, fighting for the manager, if the team has belief in what they're being asked to do. And I think we haven't seen capitulation from this team in months. And this was the perfect situation. There was a time there, 2-0, 3-0 down, where I started to worry, could it get worse? And the team got a hold of the game. And I mean, obviously turned it around, got it to 3-3. But just in the way the game turned, in terms of our dominance and our ability to create that feeling that something could come of this game, you have to start by creating the feeling that you're the dominant force. And I think two players were really instrumental in that happening, maybe three. But the first one I want to talk about, because we'll obviously talk a lot about Odegaard. This is a coming out party for him if he hasn't already had several of them. But Paul, Thomas Partey got his foot on the ball, got himself into the game. I think Xhaka was struggling a bit, and Partey just said enough. And he was, I think, the first catalyst for this change. And then obviously in the last period of the game, which we'll get to when he was playing as the lone midfielder, he really came alive as well. But, you know, again, I referenced the by the numbers column, and I think everyone should go look at it. Partey just had the kind of dominant performance after that, after we were 3-0 down, that I think a lot of us have expected from him. And I'm not sure I saw it coming. I mean, he's had some errors lately. He's looked a little, you know, a little not out of form, but out of fitness, maybe a little bit. But Paul, for me, I mean, he is one of the real catalysts for the turnaround here. Did you see him as equally influential?
Is this about me picking Xhaka for my stock rising?
You didn't have to admit that on the free pod. There's a lot of people here who don't need to know that you did that.
So, of course, I went back and had a really good look at it afterwards. And look, just to explain that wobbly I threw on you and Clive had been building me up just before that, saying that although I had a lot of dodgy sounding takes, when you listen to them afterwards, they sounded not so shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt
this was the opposite.
Invulnerable,
yeah.
Like just immortal. And I picked Xhaka for reasons I still can't quite explain. Listen, I think he was pretty good at times and a bit stodgy at other times. But what I liked was, again, it was a game in which he said, when he had his when Xhaka, I know this is the party section, but when Xhaka had his opportunities and moments, I actually think he was mostly pretty good, but he gave party the dance floor. And, you know, you started to see, I always worry about that expression. You see him spreading his legs, but you did with party. He started to kind of dominate the center of the pitch against two excellent midfielders who'd had the run of us for 20 minutes. Partey and Xhaka began to get a hold of this game and to dominate the center. And they, you know, Partey in particular, but also Xhaka, started to find Odegaard, who I've decided, I'm going to do a Clive here. I always call Odegaard, I know we're going to have an Odegaard section, I always call a player like that an eye of the storm player, and always meaning starting about 5 minutes ago. His ability to go into the most where the three elements of the storm meet, between the lines where all the action was, to be in there and to have this moment of calm, and they, and Partey in particular, just kept firing it in there, finding him, moving it on quickly. And while I think Xhaka, like I say, had a better game than many think he did, he's never going to fire that ball in as fast and thread the eye of the needle the way Partey does through the middle of the pitch. Because the other thing Xhaka won't give you quite as much is through the middle of the pitch. Like, he did his better work up the side there, and at times that paid off for us. But this has become something in recent times where we actually use the center of the pitch. And Odegaard comes towards the center because he's a left-footed player playing from the right, so he naturally swings in that way. This is something we haven't had all season, and maybe since before Emery came, where we actually have a player, Cesc-like, who can stand in the most intense part of the pitch, handle that pressure, spin, turn, find a ball out, play through the middle. Lacazette was really good in this too, in terms of linking up with him. And I think we may get to see more, not less, Lacazette starting, because he is technically a much better linking up player. And those three began to have a field day, finding each other in the middle of the pitch. But between Partey, Xhaka, I think physically we were able to play around them, dominate them, and then the Partey to Odegaard supply line, the way he fired it in there, lit them up through the middle. And once you can attack them down the middle and make them feel uncomfortable, like we've had games where we've had possession dominance, like we did against West Ham, and we ended up putting in 50 bloody crosses. We didn't put in crosses. We went up the middle, ran the sides, cutbacks. They didn't know where we were going to come at them next. And that's what that middle supply line gave us.
Mm. I think Partey enables the Odegaard game to be as effective as it is by giving him the ball 19 times. But, you know, his numbers were sensational. The most carries he's had all season, the most progressive passes he's had all season, the most final third entries he's had this season. He led the team in final third entries with 16. He had three shot creating actions. He was everywhere. He had the most carries, 79 carries, and 14 progressive carries. You know, again, his most this season. It was second on the team, progressive carries. Only Odegaard, obviously, had more. So I just think phenomenal. And 17 loose ball recoveries, his most this season, and led the team. So he wakes up when we are down 3-0. I mean, if you're going to wake up it's a good time to do it. 92% passing, by the way, for a guy who I think has recently been a bit loose. Just a great dominant performance. And Clive, that dominance, you know, it's everything we've talked about with him when he's at his best, but he did it for a consistent period of an hour, just constantly get it, look up the pitch, make a progressive pass, make a final third entry, carry the ball beyond defenders, get us out of that first phase so we can get into the attacking phase and get it to the guy who's going to do the damage. That's Odegaard 19 times. It's just a great all-around performance. So, you know, I'd like to sort of move on and talk Chambers and Odegaard because I think they're two other players that deserve a lot of focus here during that sort of middle 35 minutes where we really got into the game. But I don't want to cut you out of party because I know you love the player and this was the kind of game that makes you look right, you know?
It's not about being right. It's about, I mean, I beg to differ. I do think people are waiting for a bad pass to critique him. And I just think, well, you're not. Just have a look at what he's doing. There was some dummies and no-touch turns. And first touch beating two men. I mean, just tell me the last time we see that in our centre midfield because I'm waiting. Right? So the stuff he's doing is remarkable, in my opinion. He took one goal kick, just controlled it. We did a rewatch earlier, I'll show it to you, promise you. Did a good goal kick, just controlled it. No one went near him. There's no point. It was over. He can create new lanes. We can all see what he can do. It was just fitness for me. It was just fitness. And when he hits a wall, he hits a wall. You know, it's like a boxer in the ring. He ran out of petrol, that's it, it's over. You know, and he hits a wall. I think he's got a desperation to prove himself. That explains some of the shots. So people put a couple of dodgy square passes and a couple of shots over the bar and say parties play bad. I'm so glad sometimes for statistics because that shut people down. Listen to Charles Watts last night. He was doing his sort of player ratings and he was just critiquing a party. Then he went for the stats and went, oh, I didn't realize he had such a good game. I mean, he caught him by surprise. I think people are struggling to adapt to what they're seeing because we don't normally have this type of player. We don't normally have a player that can create a lane and disguise passes into the final third that people can't even see coming. And it's through them. You know, Barcelona do this all the time, disguise passing, Busquets, disguise pass, through the lines, entry pass, into last third, half turn, turn around, onto the back four. How many times did we do it? It's not an accident. It's skill. It's technique. It's using your eyes, using your body shape. I thought he had his best game for Arsenal easily. And the things I look for is his speed, actually. When he was on the touchline, recovery speed was really quick. And I was looking, thinking, mechanically, you're looking better. I just was thinking, you're not going to break down today. You're not going to be injured. When he almost runs with a limp when he's not quite right. You know, makes sense. And he was bumming down that line, I'm thinking, you're at it today. You're at it. And once he took over, I think it might be the first time he had more passes or touches than Xhaka in the game. And so with Partey getting this many touches, we look like this. And I tell you, last night, whilst watching that game, I rewatched it immediately. There's a comp of Odegaard going around about 4 or 5 minutes, and most comps are 2 or 3 minutes. The fact is 4 or 5 minutes tells you all you need to know. I think I watched that about 80 times last night, and because it was that good, I could barely sleep with the excitement of how we played offensively in this game for the last hour, because I think, well, I've been waiting for that. I think we've been waiting for that for a long time, and the way we did it was almost like looking back into yesteryear. It looked very much like an Arsenal team, and Partey was at the base of that.
Just real quick, Clive, I know it's not the sort of part of the game we're talking about right now, but I'd love to just get your thoughts quickly on the evolution of a system that we see late in the game when Xhaka comes off. And I struggled to really get a sense of what that formation was, so I went back and watched it a little bit more today. You theorized that it might be a bit of a 4-3-3, and I agree with you. It was a 6 with 2 8s, and
yeah.
Partey was at the base, and you had Smith Rowe and Odegaard just sort of flitting in front of him. Now, look, there's going to be a temptation to say that was brilliant because we piled on the pressure and that's the future. I think it's worth remembering we got cut absolutely to pieces at times too. And Antonio should win the game, and then Tierney has to make two sensational blocks to save the game as well. So let's not get over our ski tips, but Partey basically was a one-man central midfield in that period. He looked perfectly comfortable doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we need from him. And in that central zone, what we do on the outside and to left back zone, that's for the future. But I will say, we've said in the past that this team will develop past Xhaka at some point. Now, I think Xhaka's been brilliant, as Moses has done recently. He had a couple of dodgy moments, which we can, Burnley and Burnley, basically. Burnley, a couple of dodgy moments. But I've always felt the team would develop past him, and I hadn't really worked out what that would be and what that would look like. And I was hoping we'd go and buy somebody that would make it obvious. But actually, it's not about who we buy. It's about how we play. Mm-hmm. And there was a period in this game where we were playing a style of football that he could not get the ball where he needed it to be to play the pass that was on. And sometimes when the pass was on, he didn't have the dexterity to drop the ball where it needed to be against a mid-low block. He didn't have it. In the end, all he did was just give it to Partey. And that's why he came off. Because Mikel wanted somebody else. If the passing lane to Partey was blocked, he could create his own shot, if you know what I mean, Elliot. Create his own pass, create his own shot. That's why Smith Rowe went on. Because he fancied him to get on the ball. And if a lane's blocked, he could still create something from that side to add to the creativity. Whereas the game didn't require Xhaka's skill set. If this team's going to move forward and we're going to look something like this, that's how Xhaka's going to get developed past or evolved past, because he suddenly looked a little bit clumpier than he normally does. And I'm not one of those people that said he shouldn't play for Arsenal, because I think he's been great for Arsenal, and I think we're going to need him again. He needs to be rested. I mean, he plays all the minutes. But to this day, I felt the team evolved away from him, and the car keys were handed over to the bloke in the middle, who was fantastic.
Yeah, Elliot, can I chip in on your point about how vulnerable?
Well, if you're going to chip in on my point, yes, I would. Then absolutely, you have the green light. Go for it, please.
Oh, good, good. Like, if you think of Pep playing with Fernandinho in that spot and two attacking eights ahead of him, if that's Smith Rowe.
Well, now.
Yeah, and in our case, Smith Rowe and Odegaard, for example, he doesn't have his two fullbacks on the front line, which is what we were doing here. And obviously we were just gung-ho going for it. So like Partey would have had, say, Chambers or whoever tucking in to provide some extra support. We wouldn't be as leaning forward as we were. So hopefully with just some slightly more rational play, we could adjust this City style midfield three without it going totally to shit the other way, because you're right, they had us. There was a spell of play where for 5 minutes or so they just came at us time and time again, two, three attacks, where it all could have gone horribly wrong. But apart from that, it was really exciting down the other end. But man, we were really loading one side of the dice here. So It'll be fascinating to see if we can get to a point where we could play with two attacking eights. Really interesting twist in what we do. The toothpaste almost entirely up the far end of the tube. So.
Yeah, well, and you need the players to do it, right? I mean, so now, I mean, if Odegaard were to stay and with Smith-Rowe's development, or even if it's Saka, you could see it. I mean, we know that Arteta's going to be a keen Pep watcher, and Pep has got this 3-2-2-3 going on where it's like two center backs and a fullback, then a central midfielder and the other fullback, and then two eights, and then three forwards. And we can absolutely do that, right? I mean, we have the personnel for that now. So I'd be curious to see if that's how it develops. I think I want to give Chambers his due, but we got to get to about the smoothest, most beautiful, cleanest thing we saw this weekend. And hopefully for you, that was some beautifully shaved privates, baby. This is a Manscaped promo. I have been looking forward to this all weekend. I've been thinking about this because I'm very proud of Manscaped and proud to be aligned with them, because right now they partnered with Alex Caruso and the Testicular Cancer Society to bring awareness to testicular cancer, men's health, and early cancer detection. I think all of us have been touched at some point or another. That's a weird thing to say during a promo about this kind of stuff, but by cancer specifically. And Manscaped is committed to raising awareness for the most common form of cancer in men aged 15 to 35, giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer as part of the We Save Balls initiative, which in this instance is obviously extremely important. So they are supporting that initiative. They're giving to charity, and obviously with all the things I love about Manscaped, I'd love to put that right at the top of this mention to them, that they are working to support the early detection and treatment of testicular cancer. So that's great to see. And what a perfect natural brand alignment that is with a great cause. So what they're pushing right now is the performance package. It's the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. And I'm actually kind of jealous because I have the Lawnmower 3.0, as you know, which is the single greatest body trimmer ever. Chest hair, you can do your sideburns, you can do your privates, you can get totally clean and shaved because it's got the skin safe technology. It's waterproof, it's battery operated. But now the performance package comes with the nose hair trimmer, the weed whacker. It does ear and nose hair. See, I find this important because you know if your privates need to be trimmed, you can just look down there. And you should look down there. Be proud of yourself. But like, I'm always scared that like I have nose hair that I don't know about because I'm getting older and it's starting to grow, or ear hair. And the only way I could know is if someone calls it out. And at that point, I'd be mortally embarrassed. So they use the same skin safe technology with the weed whacker, which does the ears and the nose, which is great. Okay. Get you looking perfect everywhere. Plus, you're going to get the free gifts with this one. So you're going to get the underwear, which I'm presently wearing. You will get the travel bag for your, you know, the shed bag for your toiletries, and you'll get a couple of their wonderful toners and things like that, hygiene products. So get it. It's the number one performance package. Okay. Manscaped performance package. You'll get 20% off and free shipping with code ArsenalVision. Code ArsenalVision, all one word, because it is all one word. ArsenalVision, 20% off and free shipping. So thanks to Manscaped for supporting a great cause with their partnership with the Testicular Cancer Society. And thanks to them for this great package. No pun intended, or maybe pun intended. Hope you will go and get it. Get the ears, get the nose, get the privates, get the chest, get all of it. Because when this pandemic is over, what are we doing? We're running in the street. We're dropping our pants. And we're all going to celebrate each other's beautiful privates. Because God knows it's overdue. And that is enough of that. Manscaped.com, promo code ArsenalVision, save 20% and free shipping. Clive, is that enough of that?
Yeah, that certainly is. Good cause, though, but that's as tough as always.
You gritted your teeth a little less during the Testicular Cancer Society mention, though.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's a good cause. It's a very good cause. Yep. And I do agree with the brand alignment. So yeah, let's move on.
Okay. So we are going to get to the smoothest thing this side of Manscaped privates, though, which is Callum Chambers. No, I'm kidding. It's Martin Odegaard. We will get to Callum Chambers. Paul, I'll start with you. Odegaard obviously went absolutely nuclear. And if you do check out the By the Numbers column that I mentioned before that 7 a.m. Kickoff did for Arsblog, he just lays it out. He had 11 shot creating actions in this game. Kevin De Bruyne leads the league, averaging just over 6 a game. 11 from Odegaard in this game. And Partey was the supply line to him, but then he did everything else. And it's funny because he doesn't wind up with an assist directly, but everything we create, I mean, we had, 15 shots and 11 of them. He's either the pass for the shot or the pass before that one. So just his touch, his ability to find the space, move it up the pitch. And I don't know if he was doing it right away. That first 30 minutes, I think he was maybe dropping in too much. But once he found the space and started getting the ball between the lines, he was unstoppable. This was a really a tour de force performance from him, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. I did a bit of scouting on him. And so he's been very much like I expected, but better. He was so good in tight spaces in this thing. I knew he was good. I didn't know he was this good. I mean, they could not take the ball off him. It was so Sesky, like the best Sesk, central, pulling the strings. And then the personality he brought as well. Arteta talked about how Odegaard stepped up when everybody else was kind of trembling. And the personality, the confidence of the way he played, and not only his own game, he'd be on the ball and he'd be pointing at Chambers to run forward, as I've seen him do in other games with Bellerin or whoever. He'll tell the fullback where he wants them to be to send a diversionary run. He then puts the ball the other way. So he's starting to pull the strings. And so people know where the North Star is, where the play is coming through. All that talk earlier in the year about people not making runs, people not becoming available, Odegaard solves all that because, A, he's got the ball. B, he can do anything he wants with it. C, he knows what he wants to do with it. And D, he tells people where to go. And before you know it, he's directing traffic. He's the traffic lights. People are making the runs. They're getting into the positions because they have the confidence to know if he tells them they should move up, if they should be in that pocket, if they should be in that space, they should have made that run, that that's what they should have done. And I just think this was a massive turning point for us in terms of the level we could play at, and that it was through the middle. I mean, we've had good games in the past where we've done good things along the sides, where a team will allow you space. I call this is the kind of player I call an eye of the storm player. I don't know if you've ever heard me use that term before, but that's in particular what I was wound up about with this, that he did this right in the center of the park. The one place you can't do it against West Ham, because they won't let you in that box between their center backs and their midfielders. They won't let you have that zone. You have to go down the sides. And he's like, fuck that. And Partey's like, you know, Clive talked about Partey's speed, but the other speed he has is the quick release and the fizz on his pass is like straight up. Like, for a big guy to zip a pass with basically no backlift, it's just pop, the ball's there. You know, I love Xhaka. I think he had good aspects to his game, even in this game. But you see his passes coming a mile away, right? He winds up and the leg swings, and sure, you know, he's got a wand and he curves it. Partey, bang. There's no backlift. It's like a flex of the ankle and the ball pops up to Odegaard. He's right in the middle of it. You can't telegraph that pass. If you do, the guy's dead. And like those two just fizzing around. Lacazette as well was really nice in the middle, pinging it between those two guys. So this is exciting. When you can take a team down the middle, they can't sleep and they get rattled. And we saw them rattled. And I think that helped Chambers a lot coming up the wings too. We're about to talk about him, but part of that is knowing that the defense won't be settled on that side, because you pull them all to the center where Odegaard is. They can't leave him alone. They got to add another body from one side, another body from the other side. And before you know it, Chambers is one-on-one. And he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And I don't use the term Cesc-like too often. I'm not sure we'll be able to say it about too many games, but he was Cesc-like for 60 minutes.
Yeah, it's a fantastic performance, and it really had so many different qualities to it. Carries, through balls, close combination, close control. You know, he covered all the ground. He played every type of pass. He had a through ball into Pepe that was sensational. He had, you know, for the own goal, well, I guess there are two own goals technically, but for the Chambers cross that becomes an own goal, it's a sensationally disguised pass from Odegaard out to Chambers, who deserves credit for the hustle to overlap and get into that space. I loved every bit of this performance. And Clive, it's so telling that he's having so much influence already. He's young, he's on loan, he's new to the club, but quality just shines through when it's at this level. And I think he is starting to show that from a pure class and talent standpoint, he's really at a level that goes far beyond much of what we've seen, in that playmaking role for a long time. And I know there were a lot of people that were, hoping that we would find, I don't even want to invoke the name, but hoping that we would find someone to play the 10. Smith Rowe was doing it briefly before Odegaard showed up, and I still think he has a big future there. But what this guy showed us against West Ham, I mean, at that level, the sky's really the limit for what he could be.
Yeah, I like the term attacking mid rather than 10, because I think it boxes people into central zones, and he doesn't just play in the central zone, he plays on the right-hand side as well. And basically, he ran the game. And from a perspective, what I really liked about him was how he used his angles and how he used his own personal interior and how he used his angles. So everything around his interior circle, the way he controls it and how he moves around it, how he comes out of the space that he's just left and comes back to it knowing it's still there, is a wonderful thing, because all it does that, but he uses 2 feet. He does it with 1 foot, which means you have to basically dance over the ball. So he dances around the ball beautifully. He has an awareness of other people. He reads the game. He knows where to be before people know where. He knows where to be before everyone else. So it's no coincidence he's getting the ball in that amount of space, rolling off back lines, turning around, no one near him. Amazing. On the Chambers overlap, what's really impressive was how he commits people. So he commits people by using angles. He chops one way, chops the other way. When defenders see that, they freeze. What's he going to do next? On the Chambers one, Chambers was free. He could just pass it out there straight away. If you pass it out there straight away, what happens is you don't commit the defender. Defender shuffles over. Chambers drops it back to him, and he puts a hopeful cross in the box. So what did Odegaard do? He drives to the left first, away from Chambers. They all come over to track his movement, and then he chops it back on a reverse. So he's created the reverse himself, which then he's not only passed to Chambers, he's put a letter on it and a bow. I said, by the way, I'm chopping it in there, and then you just, all you got to do is cross it now. And that's what Chambers did, and we get the own goal from it. Mm-hmm. This guy is not just passing, he's putting messages on passing. On the Pepe one, again, Pepe wanted it to feet. He sent him to the byline. He did that on purpose. He sent him to the byline and said, clip that in. Because all he could do was clip it in. He's giving you the ball. As we used to do this, by the way, give you the ball in such a way you've only got one thing to do. Just either give it back to him around the corner. There's messages on his passes. There's pace on his passes. It's incredibly exciting. Incredibly exciting. And I'm trying to stay calm, right? Because we've seen big performances before. But I'm struggling. I'm struggling with this one. I do think he's a very, very, very interesting player. And sometimes in all our lives, you walk into a relationship that fits you and you meet that person at the right time. Yep. I've got a funny feeling he has met Arsenal at the right time in his life. Yep. He has met us and it just feels right for him. You know, sometimes you look at a player and think, you know what, he's going to go soon. I look at this guy and think, you know, you actually need us as much as we need you. And because he, this level of performance, that's a new level of performance, even in his life, you know. So it's incredible, absolutely incredible. The intelligence,
the right coach, the right team, the right player
at the right time, and more importantly. So I look at this is what I always look at when I watch football. I look at the opposition, right? So Declan Rice and Suchek, rated as a wonderful double pivot. Elliot, I'm going to show you how crap they were tomorrow, I promise you, right? I'm going to show you what they do wrong, right? So Suchek and Rice, big money. Rice, 60 million, probably going to go on Man United or Chelsea. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I saw the moment his soul left his body in this game. I actually saw it. Suchek was just running around pointing, help me, help me, help me. Benrahma come in. Nope, three of you, not enough. See you later, boys. I'm going to twist you and turn you. I looked at Moyes. Moyes had his hands on his head trying to stop him. He had his hands out wide. I urge you to watch it. He had his hands on his head trying to stop him. And then you look at the Arsenal players. How much did they defer to him? Everybody was creating angles to give it back to him. They were playing his game. Not only was he playing well, he was forcing other people to play his game. I can give no one any greater praise than that, because that is huge as a footballer. You're so good. Mm. Players defer to you. And
pause,
they know.
For 1 second. Pause on Twitter. Pause my pants. Thanks, pause.
Woohoo!
All right. That is Paul. Sorry, we let him go. Keep going, Clive. You're good.
Yeah. When you see people moving to create angles for him, because they know he's already seen the next pass. You know, heard me say a million times, the best judge of players is other players. They know when someone's hot. They know when someone's good. I'm not saying they were all like, you know, carrying water for him totally, but they were moving in a way he wanted them to move. Because again, I think the technical communication between the group was obvious. And this is why I'm so excited, Elliot, because there was a period in our recent history when we had technical, offensive, attacking midfield players that spoke a language on the pitch, that created things that were beautiful, that we associated to the coach. And now we haven't seen that. What do we say? We say, oh, the coach has got too much structure. I get really annoyed by that, because football is football and football players define the structure. There are primary messages that a coach will give, but the rest is down to you and what you see and feel. And with this guy in the team, and Smith Rowe in the team and Saka in the team, no one can tell me that they are forced to do things in a structured way. They're playing to a pattern. They're playing to overloads and diamonds, and they want to get in those periods. But everybody wants to do that. Everybody wants superiorities. And you've got to manipulate the ball to do that. These guys have got the ability to manipulate the ball, to disguise it, to move people around, to dribble past them, to go long, to go short, receive it on a half turn. Then the rest takes care of itself. You know, So I'm so excited. Maybe that's coming across, but I am so excited about what we saw at the weekend. And I can't wait to rewatch it.
He's on a paltry wage because he's still on that contract they gave him when he was young. It would be easy for Arsenal to give him the money I think he would want to stay. It's just a question of, you know, if he's putting in performances like this game in, game out, it doesn't matter what Zidane thinks about him. I don't know that Real Madrid's going to let him go, period. We just have to pray Zidane keeps his job, because if he does, that's our best chance to keep him. 4 key passes led both teams. 5 passes in the penalty area led both teams. 11 shot creating actions led all players by the most by any Arsenal player this season, as I mentioned. 4 attempted and 4 successful dribbles led all players. 2 carries in the penalty area led all players. 5 carries in the final third tied for the most by all players. 17 progressive carries led all players. I mean, just look, you can see it with your
distance
eyes.
Covered.
You can see it in
distance
the data.
Covered.
Distance covered.
11.4 kilometers, number one.
Yep, number one, all over the pitch, coming to the ball, dropping into pockets. Just a really, really full, well-rounded performance and one that is really exciting. And yet, a player that's not ours, hopefully one that will become ours, but you know, that's another issue. We got a lot more to get to, because before we get out of here, I want to give Lacazette his flowers. I think he deserves it. I want to praise Callum Chambers as well. And that inevitably means if we're going to praise those two, we got to talk a little bit about Aubameyang and the game he had. So let's start with the positive. Let's get to Callum Chambers. He was picked, and Arteta said he was picked, for his size, for his defensive solidity. I thought early in the game, and I know you disagree, but I do think early when we were struggling, he was dropping into that line of three. We weren't dropping Xhaka in like we normally do and letting him go up the pitch and be a midfielder. We were keeping Xhaka in the midfield, and Chambers was dropping in a little bit with Maria and Luis. Now, maybe it didn't happen as much as I thought it was happening. It didn't work. Chambers eventually is forced to go into a more traditional fullback role, getting up the pitch, and that's where you would have thought, it doesn't really suit him as much. He was brilliant, and everybody's going to focus on the couple of crosses, which is deserved, but what about that clipped first-time ball over the top to Lacazette that Lacazette almost floats in, you know, chips the keeper? It's really the only play he has, so I think he does the right thing there, but I mean, if Messi's playing that pass, we're cooing about it. Outside of the boot first time, outside of his butt would be even more impressive, but he did it with his boot. Over the top, chip pass into Lacazette. Clive Chambers overlapped. He played good balls. He got into dangerous areas. He was chipping the ball over the defense. He was just absolutely feeling it. He gets called Cafu by Carragher on the UK broadcast. I mean, a pretty good day for Callum Chambers. And, you know, I have to say, just from my point, I will always think of Callum Chambers as a center back because that's what he came into Arsenal and was at first, right? And sometimes when you think of a player a certain way, else, oh, he's a converted center back. He can't run. He's too stiff. He's not a fullback. He got roasted by Montero that one time against Swansea. He's not a fullback. And then he goes to Fulham and he plays central defensive midfield and he's their player of the season. It's like, oh, he's not a fullback. He's central defensive. You have these preconceived notions about a player. He's not the right physical profile to be a fullback. He's not this, he's not that. But he's played it twice now in a couple of games. He's been really good in both Burnley and now again against West Ham. So what's your evolving a pit position of Callum Chambers' position in the pecking order here, but also just on the game he had specifically?
Yeah, so we did sort of say, didn't we, pregame, that we thought, well, he might play in this game.
Point blank, you said, I could see Callum Chambers starting here. I thought about clipping that audio from the last podcast and putting it out. But then I was like, you know, if I had said it, I'd do that. But it was Clive somehow.
So I did fancy him to play because West Ham were giants, right? So I thought he might play, similar to Burnley. The game changed. I thought this could be a test for him now. So people were saying he's getting done on that side. And I did look at it, and he was getting loaded up on that side. But not, you know, he was trying to stay with Benrahma when really what's happening was we should drop off a little bit more when there's no pressure on the ball. And they're dropping the ball over. The Lingard ran in there. Luis went fishing with Antonio when he shouldn't have done. I don't think Luis and Marie work because I think they're both leaders and they don't want to take any messages from each other. So they're the wrong combination for me. And any of the other combinations were, but those two don't. And so we had a little bit of a jagged back line there, and they were dropping the ball in there. The Callum Chambers running back doesn't look that great, and on their goal, he was just a fraction away from cutting out the Lingard goal. He recovered brilliantly. The line was perfect. Everything was good. He just missed it. And the reason why I sort of like him, you know my views on Bellerin, sometimes I think he's too active. He's hard to play off of in a role when we want him to be a little bit more an underlapper with the winger ahead. Cedric is almost like a combination of Bellerin and Chambers. He can stand in, but but his support plays a bit more intelligent. Bellerin very front-footed. But Chambers is probably the profile of fullback I'd like us to buy, because I think we needed that, you know, for the team. We need a bigger player, someone who can stand in that space. But actually, after that performance, I just wish he could run a yard quicker on recovery, because because sometimes with football, it's not just about, you know, how you play and what you can do. Sometimes you need to bring yourself to the show. And Callum Chambers has got a brilliant football character. You can just see it, right? He brings character to this team. He was getting in the box in free play. He was winning the ball in the air. He wasn't just charging up and down like a three-year-old. He was timing his run, third man runs. He attacked the ball in such a way when the next thing was obvious. On one of the goals, he runs back with Benrahma and he sprints back. On Match of Day 2 last night, I didn't notice it in the game, but he sprints back with Benrahma. He just about saves with him. The ball breaks down and he turns around and goes straight up the other end and sets up one of the goals. Right, so that sort of fitness, considering that's his second start, I mean, how hard have you got to work to do that, to get that level of performance out of yourself on the second game? And football sometimes comes down to micro moments. He's been at Arsenal probably since 2013, 2014. And I'm telling you, that maybe was a game for his Arsenal career. That one game may have decided whether he gets a contract again or not. He gets sold in the summer. Because that's what can happen sometimes. You can spend years and years and years at a club and you get an hour to show what you've got. If you don't cut it, you're done. And he did everything perfectly. I thought he was tremendous. And I've called him in the past. I don't think he's a centre-back. Never have felt it. I think he's too weak. He's played centre midfield. I like him there. But I also feel this role as an inverted right-back is perfect for him. Because I think he can play midfield. As a kid, he was a midfielder. He broke into Southampton's team as a right-back. He was a centre-back, stroke right-back. He broke into a team of injury as a right-back. Played brilliant against us. We bought him. Deployed him as a right-back primarily until he got roasted. Then that game seemed to have really affected his profile to the rest of us. And he has struggled in the past. I've been one that's critiqued him. But I've been one this year that's called for him, because I think his skill sets suit this new football that we're playing. I think he suits more than almost anybody.
It's hard. I'm just not even going to say it, because I have to admit so much of what I think about him is just bias based on looking at him physically. Like, I mean, for the cross he puts in for the own goal, Clive, he makes a great overlapping run. But just watching him run, I want someone to cut that together with the gif of Forrest Gump running home, because he's so upright and so stiff. Yeah, you know,
chest first, he calls it. Chest first is out in front.
Yeah.
And he runs chest first. I honestly love people with character. You know, a football team is made of different shapes and sizes and people, and somebody that steps up when and plays a game which is primarily outside of his skill set at a time when we need it is somebody that I don't mind being around.
Yeah, look, I mean, I have trouble seeing Kyle Walker as a fullback, because he just doesn't look like one to me. You know, but he is. So.
Yeah, I think he's probably the best one in the league, mate, if you ask me.
No, I know. I'm just saying. So, I mean, it's not always about, you know, the physical profile. I think his delivery's good. He can step into midfield. I mean, look, any player who can play that first time outside of the boot, chip ball to play Lacazette in like that.
And he called it as well.
Yeah.
He called it, didn't he? He pointed.
Yeah.
The ball was coming and he said, get in there. I mean, I just like when people approach games. I always judge people in adversity, Elliot. That's when I judge people.
It's a confusing position for us, Clive, because we don't have anybody that you'd say right now has completely grabbed the reins. Cedric's been fine. Bellerin probably is on the outside massively now with his form. Chambers can say, I played two games and played great in both. It's my turn. You wonder what Maitland-Niles must be thinking, you know, watching all this, by the way, because, you know, very well could have been his position to have at Arsenal instead of what he's doing now. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine. But, well, we mentioned Lacazette getting in on goal. So here's the thing. Clive, I have always said that Lacazette does, you know, good non-striker stuff. Facilitating, building up, you know, giving the ball to teammates, back to goal, fine. But my complaint has always been that we overrate that stuff because the other stuff has to be there too. He did all of the good non-striker stuff in this game. But it's the fact that he added to that, getting in behind the defense for that chip, you know, shot that's cleared off the line, scoring a goal that's taken away from him, but one touchdown, swivel and fire, old school Lacazette in the box play, right? One touch, out of his feet, swivel and hit it ferociously. He scores a header at the back post, you know, from absolute poacher position. The stuff he hadn't been doing. The stuff he hadn't been doing. So now he's doing that too. And that's what you need from Lacazette. And I thought this was the complete number nine performance from him, not the false nine performance from him. So is that how you saw it? I mean, for me, it's the fact that he added the stuff you got to do when you have the nine on your back that he hadn't been doing. And in this game, he did both.
Yeah, he did everything. A couple of symptoms this game. West Ham, they got a couple of goals more than they expected. They dropped away into a 4-4-2. They thought they'd mid-block us and then beat us with pace, you know, with Lingard and Antonio and then cross to Suchek and get those and just finish the game off. They thought they'd get a breakaway. They needed it, right? So they gave us the pitch. They didn't expect us to do what we did around their central zones. And neither did I, by the way. And the way that Lacazette and Odegaard rolled off was just wonderful. And Aubameyang did it as well, by the way. And they weren't really tight. So they were really quite passive. They didn't want to give any free kicks away. So we were rolling off really easy, turning around. And Lacazette's got a lovely little inside pass to Saka. And maybe that'll tell you what the game plan was, by the way. Into Lacazette, inside the left ball.
You're saying that would have been Aubameyang if the game had been going the way we expected it to be.
Exactly. Yeah,
fair enough. Well, and if it had been Aubameyang, you fancy him to maybe do a little better with that chance.
Fancy one-on-one, yeah. Right? Yeah. So,
I say that, he just blew a one-on-one midweek, but yeah. So.
It happened two or three times. I think they wanted to get on Creswell's inside shoulder. They wanted to drive down that space and use Lacazette as the ball pass around the corner. And I thought Lacazette showed a lot of fight. He was fresh, remember? He was fresh. He didn't play midweek. He was fresh, and he was really physical around there, but I thought was super intelligent with his movement. And again, because we were pressed up, because they pressed, dropped back, we pressed up. We kept winning the ball. We kept turning it over, winning it high, and pushing them back, slicing through them, rolling off. We crept forward. I mean, the average positions were amazing. Luiz was in their half building play, right? So everything's further forward. So Lacazette's now nearer the goal. So he hasn't got to get a taxi to get into the box. He's really close, do you know what I mean? And then he looked like a complete centre-forward, you know, whereas if it's Aubameyang now, his secondary movement's really, really good. He can cover like 15, 20 yards in no time at all when he's at the box. With Lacazette, you've got to get everything further forward so that he can get closer. And I thought he had a great game. He should have gone down. You said it last night. He should have gone down and really forced the situation. Although he got cleaned out by the goalkeeper, you know, you see it after, you think, oh, why wasn't that a penalty? And maybe the rules, something's happened because it just didn't get called out in the same way, you know? So I'm not sure what's happened there. But he got cleaned out. I thought that was unlucky. He took a left-foot shot on Odegaard, beat about 28 players, turned it around the corner, took a left-foot shot that curled. You know, it wasn't bad again. He just looked dangerous, and they couldn't handle him. And, what you know, he's going to have good games because he's a good player, right? I do feel that we need a better version of him. But, again, mentally, you've got to ask yourself the question, right? Is he better for us at the moment with this multi-positional attacking mids that move and want someone to play off? Is he better for us? Is he stronger for us mentally to stay in the fight, to stay in the fire when boots are being around him, to sacrifice himself for other people with the technique? Is he the one? He's really challenging Aubameyang. You've got to say it. You've got to be fair and put your hand up.
And is it fair to say in a season like this that sometimes picking the fresher player, even if they're not the better player, is the way to go, because it's such a mental season with the amount of football. And you're right, there's 3 8s playing all around him in Saka, Odegaard, and Smith-Rowe, if you want to give Saka an 8 and call him something else if you want. But, you know, maybe having a guy who can be a little bit more involved in the little triangles on the edge of the box. But again, my argument, Clive, would have been, I don't care what he does on the edge of the box because he doesn't do anything in the box. Well, now this is one game, I get it. But, you know, like my argument, the North London Derby, he played well. But he did no striker stuff. He missed a bunch of chances. He really wasn't there to do much. He scores the penalty that wins us the derby, so I guess he did something. But this game is different. Back stick header, you know, turn and swivel, shot from a nice cross, layoff to Saka to put him in on goal. End product, really good strike stuff, running in behind to collect a through ball that he just, you know, gets cleared off the line. This was striker stuff in addition to all the 9.5 stuff that he already does. So yeah, I mean, this changes the calculus, but it only changes the calculus in part, Clive, because of the form of Aubameyang. And I unfortunately, we have to discuss it. Look, I said this in the instant reaction pod, and I'll reiterate it. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang spoofed his XG a bit when he was playing on the left when we were playing 3-4-3. It was a little bit of a different role, and he was on a hot streak of finishing, and he scored a bunch of goals, and so it looked okay. I never thought he was great there. And since we've played him up front, mostly we've looked really good. Our underlying metrics are really good, and his underlying metrics are excellent. He's missed some gilt-edged chances, and I'm not excusing that, but he's been on the end of them. He's been there. This was a bad game. You know, we have a reluctance sometimes to just say someone was bad. He was bad in this game. He goes to sleep for their third goal. He had to get moved from the right to the left because, according to his manager, we were suffering defensive-wise, which is code for basically he wasn't giving the support to his teammates that he needs. He has 63% passing, the worst in the team, had no shots and no shot-creating actions. That's bad. That's bad. In a game where we dominate for an hour, for your ostensibly best and highest-paid attacker to have no shots and no shot-creating actions, bad. This is a bad game from Aubameyang. And I don't like him in the role. I think the role is a facilitating factor in him. I mean, you look at it, Clive, we've been playing with Smith Rowe over there. Aubameyang is not Smith Rowe. You know, and if you say on the right, well, fine, Saka, same thing. High touch, high buildup, high connectivity players, and now you got Aubameyang, and he's not that. If this is how we want to play, it's a straight choice for me. It's Aubameyang at 9 or it's Lacazette at 9, or maybe Martinelli someday, but it's not Aubameyang wide. And I realize with no Willian available and Smith Rowe not fit to start, he didn't have a lot of options. Am I being too harsh on Aubameyang? And how much do you think is role versus form?
I think I do take your point about the role, and I just started to get used to him as center forward. And he was doing fine until he lost his alarm clock, right? Three Spurs. And that's like, what are you doing? No, seriously, what are you doing? And then you have a sulk in front of national TV. You play the game on the Thursday night. You don't really recover. You sulk halfway through that. You miss three open goals. And then you come to the next game. You're playing on the left and you don't do your work. Do your work. Be professional, right? And he's a player that just needs things to be just right. And that's the truth. And he is mentally amazing when everything's right. And it's how he handles adversity, I'm afraid. I've had this feeling since Baku, funny enough. That's when it really dawned on me. And I've said this before. The cameras flashed to Lacazette and Aubameyang. And he's flashed to their faces during that game. They've been boxed out in the box by David Luiz, would you believe it? And they were disconnected from our team. And I looked at them. I thought they didn't have an answer. They didn't have an answer against a low block. They didn't have one. They didn't have the attributes. I said to myself, we've got to move on from one of these right there and then. And, you know, I thought he was mentally incredibly weak in that period. But then he came back and led us to the FA Cup and just really shoved one straight back at me, you know, and showed a level of leadership that I didn't think he had. You know, he carried us. And that's why I'm loath to kill him right now, because he will come back. But you just know who you've got. This is who he is. He's somebody that can do anything when he feels right. And he doesn't feel right. And I would ask myself a question and ask you a question, Elliot. Do you think there's something else going on? You know, because you were the first one to say to me, do you think he regrets signing the contract? You were the first one to say to me about the options of him not signing the contract and where, you know, at the time I'm thinking, now we've got to sign him. And I look at him and I look at somebody that obviously is a sensitive soul. Family issues. Is there something else going on? Because he's one of those people that you can't help but see when something's not right. And he doesn't quite look right to me. And as a footballer, I don't think there's nothing to do with age curves, nothing like that. He does not look right. And when he's right, he's a different person, different animal. And he looks bereft of confidence, belief in himself in key situations. And when he went forward in that left-hand channel, left foot shot, like he did versus Leeds, roof in the net. That's what you get when he's on fire. Mm. He's looking to check because he wants to get on his right foot. That tells you he's overthinking. He's worried. He's stressed. He's letting things get to him. That's what I think. But I don't know what you think.
Yeah, it's hard for me to know, right? Because I do think we are not necessarily accustomed to this type of player. Thierry Henry, one of the great strikers of all time, was a guy who could score 25 league goals but also produce 10 assists, who could take the ball back to front and beat a whole team. I mean, you know, he was on the ball. He was noticeable. He was doing things, whether he was scoring, whether he wasn't. Robin Van Persie was a 10 and a 9 combined. You know, Olivier Giroud, while not my cup of tea, was a guy who was going to be involved because he had his back to the goal. He was playing flicks and layoffs and heading the ball, you know, and holding his hair in horror as he's missed a chance, or, you know, he was noticeable. You know, I think about some of the strikers that have been here in the last two decades, and whether they were scoring goals or not scoring goals, you're going to notice them. And Aubameyang is a different animal. Aubameyang is not going to do much but put the ball in the back of the net 20, 25 times a season. And that is a very important thing to do. Maybe we want to move away from being a team that has a striker that does that. You look at Manchester City, they don't play with a striker. And they're certainly not going to play with a guy who has 17 touches in a game, who completes 63% passes, creates no chances, and takes no shots. But that's who Aubameyang is. I think if you put him through the middle, he's an extraordinary talent who's going to score you 20 league goals in a season, and you live with that. We've paid him in such a way that we do have to live with that. So I think we're going to have to deploy him that way and learn to play that way. And with three number eights who are extremely technical and talented around him, I think it can work, especially if you've got Odegaard who can lay on the kind of passes behind him that does. So I'm not too worried. The one thing I'll say, Clive, we are always going to overestimate attitude, emotion as fans, because we know very, very little of what it really is like. If you watch, Aubameyang's off the pitch when we score our third goal. He's right behind the goal. He runs onto the pitch and celebrates with his teammates. And he looks as happy as if he scored it himself.
That was his highlight moment.
It was, the fact but that it's he's a good thing to see, trauma, isn't it?
Absolutely. The fact he's having a trauma with his own game doesn't mean he's fine everyone in the dressing room. Do you know what I mean? I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying he's going through his internal battle. So as a player, what I always say is, okay, you're going for a bad moment, but you have two or three primary skills. Make them work for you. So, you know what? One of his great skills is movement, right? So Partey tried to get him in one time. He just dropped a bit short. So he was trying to get him behind. And what he had to do was just go earlier. Go early. Go across the line. Make people chase you. Get people tracking you. Don't play West Ham's game. And I have to give West Ham credit. They forced Aubameyang into a game he didn't want to play on this day. You know what I looked for earlier? He played on Thursday night almost the whole game, did he? I think he might have played in the Europa League game, if not the whole game.
Yep.
There was a training video on Friday where he trained, and not all the team trained. Not only did he train, he did extra shooting drills afterwards, with just the three of them, with El Neni and Pepe. So I don't think he's got a bad, unless he thinks he's got a bad attitude. I don't like that. You don't get to this level with a bad attitude. You don't get to the elite level he is, with top five in Europe, whatever it is, in goals. You don't get there with a bad attitude. You get there with sacrifice, with work, with effort, with doing extra training to you know, practice your skill set that's made you this multimillionaire. You do not get there with bad attitudes. You have dips, and you have to manage those dips as a young professional, right? And your coach can help you, and you can help yourself. And so I'm loath to get on him. I want him to be better, obviously, because we know there's a big chance for us this year. If we play like we did in the last hour, the Europa League is a real chance for us. It's a real chance, because that's a high level of quality. But we both know our best goal scorer is our form, and we need him back real quick.
Yeah, well said. I'm going to worry about it less. I will say this. I think it tells you how much the manager believes there's always a goal in him, that he waited to take him off as long as he did, you know, because he was having a stinker. And maybe, unfortunately, it also tells you a little bit about how much he trusts Martinelli, unfortunately, because Martinelli had two touches in this game. He came on, he had two touches. Just real quick, because we can get out of here. We're going to do a lot more over the international break. We're going to rewatch the second half of this game for patrons tomorrow. So if you'd like to, you can join us for that. But that last period of this game, where the game got stretched and was broken play a lot, and, you know, they had chances and we had chances. You know what I like, Clive? I think one of the things that I had a question about with Arteta when he first arrived is it felt like he was a manager who would play for a draw. If he had the point, you know, he'd play to hold on to that point. He didn't do that in this game. He wanted all 3 points. He wanted to go win this game, and the team wanted to go win this game, and he let them go try to do that at the peril of losing the point they had. And you could say, well, yeah, what are you going to do at this point? You're in ninth. No, I think that there are managers that would have said, okay, we got back to 3-3. We got something from this game, which is amazing. Call off the dogs. Let's keep this draw. Let's not risk it. But that's not how we played. We played to try to get the fourth goal. We could have had the fourth goal, but we could have conceded a fourth and fifth ourselves. One of the players who I thought, again, you just can't help but notice him when he's on. You know, before we get out of here, I think we should just touch on Pepe. He is a player that the manager, to me, it's pretty clear. He sees him as the second option, as the right side of the three behind the striker. That's his role. That's what he sees him as. But when he is on, you notice him. His cross to Lacazette is exceptional with his weak foot. He gets in on goal and has a good chance. And, you know, I think, you know, on another day, that's a goal. He has another one on his left that I don't think he hits as well. Unfortunately, hits straight at the keeper. But I can't remember the last time Pepe came on and wasn't creating or on the end of chance after chance. He's just a player who seems to always be in the middle of shooting opportunities, of chance creation. So how do you see his role, and am I overstating his influence?
No, I don't think you are. Again, I look for another one that looks happy at the club. They all look happy at the moment, and just wonder where they all go in the first quarter of a game.
He's banging on the door, right, to have more opportunities. Yeah. In my view, of all the players, he's the one that is really banging on the door.
So we've seen Odegaard explode, and we've seen Smith-Rowe explode, we've seen Saka explode, and I think we've seen a consistent level of performance from Pepe now. And he doesn't seem to be getting the rewards the same as everybody else. Right? So it's like the moment that he doesn't do something right, he gets Willian pops up from somewhere and takes his position. Right? So I think he can do more than people think he can do. I think his reaction to turnovers is really good. I think he's dangerous. I think he attracts people. I think he had a couple of shot efforts in the box in this game. The cross was unbelievable. You know, people said he hasn't got a right foot. Well, he has got a right foot. You know, he scored goals with his right foot, and now he's crossing on the stretch with his right foot. It feels as though we bought an incomplete player at a complete price. And because of that, we obviously have, which is our right as fans. Someone comes in for 70 million quid, even though it's in installments over like 28 years, it's still 72 million pounds, right? And people have expectations, and we didn't see that. But we've seen something better now, much improved, another one that seems to fit this group. He's got a different skill set to the other attacking mids, and he's a bit more of a finisher scorer, but he's working harder to be a midfielder that can be trusted. And I do like his ability. I do like his football arrogance. I do like his, you know, almost like a street footballer skill set that he's got. It's very hard to read, but also very easy to blame when it doesn't work out.
That's a good point.
Is he pushing Saka? I think he is. But he's only pushing Saka because Saka's, you know, he's dead in his legs, isn't he? You know? But even when Saka's dead in his legs, I watched second half again today. His positioning and how he dragged Creswell around was still great. He still played a rat attack with Odegaard. He still plays at a rhythm, which is Arsenal rhythm. You know, so even though he's not going around people and just leaving them behind, and he's not really, he's taking big strides in his shots. You know, his stride pattern's wrong. He's slashing at shots rather than passing them in the corner. That'll all come back when his freshness comes back. But Pepe's right there, mate. So give Saka a rest. I wish he hadn't played on Sunday, because he wouldn't have gone away with England. And we have to play three games in like 6 days, right? So I'm not sure if he's going to play, but there's that danger. And I'd like to see him rest. But Pepe's close, real close. But again, we're going to need them all. And his 5-sub rule in the Europa League, we're going to need all these guys. So, I'm glad to see him play so well.
I'll tell you this. If Smith Rowe has some durability concerns, or if he wants to get some run at the 10, if Odegaard has to rest or whatever, I'd much rather see us play Saka and Pepe. Move Saka back to the left, let Pepe play on the right, put Aubameyang through the middle, whatever the case is, then see Oba out on the wing. So, yeah, something to consider.
I'm with you there. I don't think we should do that to our main guy. If he's got to share the game, Lacazette, share the game. Do you see what I mean? Rather than affect his confidence even more by putting him on a fullback who's the top assist person for West Ham in Creswell, who's made like 7 assists or something like that.
I think we're a little fortunate.
Not great.
I think we're a little fortunate. Look, we can still finish top six. That's not gone. We could still finish top four if, you know, everything goes completely nuts. But I think Arteta actually has something going for him here. He's got some big games coming up. It's Liverpool right after the international break. He's got Chelsea on the horizon. He still has Everton ahead. He's going to find out which players he can trust in big games over the next couple of weeks. And if we're able to get past Slavia Prague and maybe have a couple of legs against Emery's Villarreal and then potentially a final against United or something, these big games, games against Spurs, games against Liverpool, games against Chelsea, games against Everton, they're going to help him get this team ready mentally, physically, but also in terms of who he thinks he can trust in different situations for those big European games coming up. You got to get past Slavia Prague. I understand that, but we should expect to do that. That doesn't mean it's done. I mean, we made tough work of Benfica, pretty easy work of Olympiakos, all things said and done. We should get past Slavia Prague, the racist bastards. And then we should, you know, be staring at the opportunity to win a European trophy. And he's got games in the league, Clive, to help position him to do that. And I think that's a benefit. You know, he's not playing all the relegation teams the next few weeks. We have an easy run-in, which is kind of ideal. I say easy in air quotes because nothing's super easy in the Premier League. But he's got a few big games to measure his team against. And I think that's helpful.
Yeah, I think well, the whole football world wants us to beat Slavia Prague, that's for sure. My Scottish friends messaging me, my Rangers friends messaging me. I've even got friends in Celtic messaging me saying you got to beat them lot. You know, so everyone wants us to beat them. So I cannot see Arsenal messing up there. I hope we don't, because we need to sort that out. What really excited me over the weekend was the flaw of this team I've seen before. You know, we've seen it throughout the season. We know it's there. It's more explainable every time you see it, and it's becoming more public. So the players that are involved in those decisions, although it's quite collective, need to wake up to the fact that they should have higher standards. But the ceiling of what I saw at the weekend was something that I hadn't seen before for a long time. And that attacking display was absolutely sensational against a team which doesn't concede goals. It's got some players there that are in the England squad, in Rice and Lingard, Suchek. You know, Dawson and have done quite well for them this season. Creswell's done well for them. Suval's done well for them. They've got some players that are on top of their game and they're top of their confidence and they fancied it. And we absolutely destroyed them. And I promise you, West Ham got maximum reward. When we watch it again, you'll see they got maximum reward for a really good 25 minutes. They got three goals. They didn't expect that.
Yeah.
If they anything, otherwise we take them, and we take them properly as well. It's down to us again. That is even a draw. If we go in at 1-0, we destroy them second half.
You know what sucks, Clive, is because of social media and tweeting and Discording and Facebooking and all that, you document your feelings at each stage of the game. Whereas, you know, if you're just at the pub, you're going mental and screaming at the TV, or if you're at the stadium, you're screaming at the players the first 30 minutes, whatever, and then you're cheering and you're up and you're down. You know, I think about the Reading, League Cup tie that day that we came back, the Shamrock brace in extra time or whatever it was. And I put some tweets out there early in that game that I wanted back, believe me. But I loved this. This was fun. It wasn't always fun, but it was fun. And you know, the thing that had gotten lost in the depths of our despair in November and October was just how little I looked forward to watching Arsenal play football. And right now, win, lose, you know, mental mistakes, errors, great chance creation that we blow, were fun to watch right now. And that, this is entertainment. And are you not entertained, as they say? I am entertained. Okay. So, all right, let's leave it there. Clive's on Twitter, Clive PFC. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
My name is Alex Pitting, me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. No football for 2 weeks, but we gave you 90 plus minutes of podcast today, so hopefully that helps. We'll do the second half rewatch tomorrow for patrons, and then we'll have pods sprinkled throughout the international break and try to come up with some fun stuff. Maybe do a big mailbag as well to cover a bunch of your questions. So plenty more ahead, and then the season gets real interesting when we come back. So very excited for all that. I hope you're well. I hope you're healthy. I hope you're doing okay wherever you are. We love you. And we will talk to you after Arsenal 10, Liverpool 0.